When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is brought to you by Fretish.com. Fretish is a brand new service that enables you to rent your musical equipment to other local musicians and make money from your instruments while you're not on the road. If you have a collection of guitars, amps, pedals, or other musical kit, why not list it on Fretish and start connecting with musicians just like you? Listings are free and you set the price and conditions of your rental, as well as having full control to reject any rental requests. Check out Fretish.com and start making money from your guitar collection today. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Ah, yes.
Fine voices, one and all. Everyone all right this evening?
Absolutely.
I'm
in the living room this evening.
Yeah, Matt, so you've changed your position. You're looking more cosy. The internet seems to be working a little better, so... Good to have you on board as always, joining us via the power of the internet. So last week was the Guitar Nerds quiz. If you haven't listened to it, do go and listen to it, because I'm sure there'll be references to the Guitar Nerds quiz.
Joe
in this
lost.
Episode. Don't spoil it.
Joe won.
Yeah, thank Joe you. Definitely won. That's
thank
the,
you.
That's the,
thank you. Yes,
the spoiler.
Yes, I won.
So, so if you haven't listened to that, do go and listen to this.
Joe came second.
I'm sure there will be big spoilers. Lots happened this week in the interim. So, new videos up on the YouTube channel. Joe and I have been working on some stuff discussing the new PRS guitar, the Silver Sky. That video has been doing pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, the Silver Sky. I was loathed to actually have to do a video on it or edit it. You'll notice I haven't done a video on it or even spoken about it for my actual job.
I'm sure you will
this week. Its very existence.
Talking of Guitar Shop videos, did you see that John at Peach has got an original 63 Strat? It's actually his, which he ran through a 2-Rock, which was John Mayer's old rig, and then ran the Silver Sky through a J-Mod and did like an A-B comparison between the two.
Oh, that's cool.
The 63 Strat sounds way better.
Okay. Joe, why didn't you do anything with a 63 Strat?
You haven't got one.
Yeah, I don't have one.
Oh, okay.
We've got some great 60s custom shops, actually, at the
if
moment.
If only had like, real 60s guitar in the shop that you could have shot some great videos with. Mm.
Talking about real 60s guitars, you had a visit at AGAC from a famous guitar player this week.
Yes, my second most hated man in the world after
that's the thing.
After
these
John
two
Mayer.
Stories tie in very, very closely. John Mayer's 60s guitars, yeah, plus the people that you love.
The equally overrated and untalented Joe Bonamassa came into GAK. He was playing down at some venue which I assume had plenty of seating for all the old people, but he came down to have a little look around and he spotted our very fetching we've had it for a little while on like a commission sale a 1962 real 1962 ES335. Which has been sitting around a little bit I think people were slightly put off because it doesn't have its original tailpiece.
Right.
It's been switched up for it had the original tailpiece. It didn't have the original saddles.
There we go.
Oh, that's what it was.
It had nylon saddles rather than the original steel, because the nylon ones sound better.
Yes,
but I think it even had a letter.
I think maybe it had a tailpiece fitted at one point then, because there are drill holes for it. There are, yes, there are holes. I don't know whether that was a mod in that case that's been undone to make it.
I guess those would
bring it back to its
two common mods: add the nylon saddles, and also take off the whatever tailpiece was on there.
This guitar is there's a bit of background just from our perspective. This guitar has been through all of our hands at one point because
really?
yeah
I don't think I'd seen this guitar have you not
before. Okay, because the person who Gak was selling it on behalf of had brought it in a couple of times into the shop whilst Matt and I were still working there, so I've seen this a couple of times and I plugged it in. It sounded absolutely phenomenal, but my favourite thing about it my favourite thing about it was it had in the case, if I remember correctly, it had all of the case candy.
It did,
including the instructions of how to use a tunematic bridge, because it's a 62 yeah. and they were still fairly new around then.
Yeah.
He still had that in the case, which I thought was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it had all the case candy in like its original packaging.
Really nice. Just this really fun little letter that says what a tunematic bridge is. It's like, can you imagine anybody including that now? You'd open it up and be like, all right, come on, calm
down. I'll just put that in the bin.
I kind of think it's good they don't include it, because then it encourages people to mess around with it and then bring it back and go, yeah, I bought this guitar and now it's broken.
We always used to do that in the shop. People would come in and go, oh, do I not get any tools with the guitar? And it's like, well, it does ship with them, but we take them out of the box because we don't really want you to be messing around with this. We'd rather you just bring it back in so that in 3 months you don't bring it back in and it's completely broken. It's actually better if you just don't have the tools to do any repairs.
Yeah, I found someone had left a screw in the top.
Just in the end of the neck, there was a bolt. So
I tried to unscrew it, and I don't know, it stuck.
Yeah, I just made it like turned it all the way around and to the end, and now, and the guitar's gone a bit weird. Yeah, I was just tightening it up because I wanted to get a real low action, so I just kept tightening it, and then there was this weird crack. Yeah, it was odd. That's called a truss rod break.
Bonamassa actually played the 335.
Did he play at the show that night?
The very night, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of into that.
Cool. He played it for 4 songs, apparently, which is quite impressive to like purchase it that day. Obviously he had his tech set it up and then drop it into 4 songs of your set. Yeah. That's a lot of faith to put in a 62.
Well, you say
to sort
that,
of hold its tuning and...
I mean, of pretty much anybody in the world, if there's anybody who knows about buying vintage guitars and then using them, he's probably a pretty good judge.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of Les Pauls and 335s that he's had over the years.
He is a cool dude. Like, for guitar collecting stuff, I love that video of him going around his house with all the random bits and bobs that he has.
I think it's quite impressive because, you know, when you watch like rig rundowns, for example, of particular artists, they're like, yeah, I've got my tech and I have, these are the 8 guitars I'm going to use in the set or whatever, the 4 guitars, 8 guitars. I use this one for these songs, this one for this. And it's all planned out, you know, in the rehearsal process for the gigs and the tour or whatever. And, you know, say what you will about Joe Bonamassa, I don't particularly like his music, but I think he's a pretty good guitar player. You know, to then suddenly on the day go, yeah, I've just bought this guitar and use it for 4 tunes.
Totally.
And not, seemingly not even worry about it, you know, not rehearse with it or anything, and just slip that into the set.
On stage now.
I think that's cool.
Just 3 Tweed Twins and then the Double Land Special, which is two of the overrated specials in one box and a wah. And that's it.
He's gone from basically a ton of signature pedals and loads of stuff, including the signature carpet on stage, to basically nothing.
No, it wasn't a carpet. Wasn't it an amp baffle?
He had an amp baffle, but didn't he also...
He had a big... Because when me and Joe was there... Was Joe there?
Yeah, I was there.
You were there.
I mean, in body.
We did the rig rundown with his tech, and they had like a Joe Bonamassa carpet.
There was a Joe Bonamassa rock as well, to keep one of the amps from rattling off
brick,
stage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Joe Bonamassa brick. The brick-a-massa.
But Mikey, who's his tech, who I've met a couple times since, is like also a really knowledgeable dude and is in charge of like his entire lockup, which is just like, you know, insane, really. You think the sheer amount of gear. And in a way, it's a great business decision because, you know, it's hard to make money from music these days, and you have to go out on the road, you have to play gigs, and you have to sell merch, and you kind of have to like invest your cash. And it's like, what better way to invest it in basically being like, I've got 10, 59 Les Pauls.
Yeah, I mean, if you are, you know, if you collect guitars and you basically buy up all of the ones that people want to buy, that's pretty a solid, yeah, it's pretty much a solid investment, isn't it?
And then he's owned them, and then they're like, well, yeah, now they're worth it.
Haven't you?
I'm just looking forward to the John 5 fire sale that happens in like, you know, 30 years or something.
All of the tellies.
When he just liquidizes all of the tellies, yeah.
When he opens up his reverb store and it's just all tellies.
Every year.
That's crazy.
Every year of production.
That's crazy.
And he collects. I remember watching a video and he's like, oh, I love the Mexican bowling ball.
Oh, yeah. The swirl one. Yeah, the swirls.
Whenever he sees a swirl, he'll buy it.
Yeah, because they're only a few years old, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're not that much money.
No, no, you get them for 400 quid. It's probably not, you know, it doesn't, until you start going back to probably 1979... you're probably not paying more than 600 quid a pop if you're buying this stuff secondhand.
Yeah.
So if you're only buying, you know, if you were buying one guitar a year, it's not actually that much money. I mean, yes, it is a lot of money, obviously. But for someone like John Five, who's made it his thing to kind of collect these guitars, for the last 30 or 40 years, you don't have to spend that much money.
No.
It's only when you get into, yeah, like the late 70s stuff that it starts to actually get silly. But you can pick up an 80s telly for 500 quid.
I mean, you would never pick it up again.
Well, yeah, yeah. Why would you ever? But if you're looking to complete the...
Gotta catch them all.
It's like, sorry, Mark, go on.
I was going to say, it's like the Dion Dublin sticker from, you know, your Premier League books. Like, you got to have one, but you don't, you're not that bothered about it, you know.
That is a reference that is lost on, I would say, 100% of the listeners to this podcast.
Love a bit of Dion.
I was going to say, talking of tellies, one thing that I think came up this week was Stevie Ray Vaughan's Jimbo telly.
Nocaster, yeah.
The Nocaster.
It was weird. No, was it a Nocaster or was it an Esquire?
I think it was a Nocaster.
It was weird, this, because people were saying, like, oh, it's going to go for loads of money. Oh, what if it's like $2 million or whatever, $2 million? But, I mean, it's not a guitar he's particularly famous for playing, is it?
No,
it's got his brother's name in it.
It went up for auction before and failed to reach its
reserve,
whatever it's 200,000.
Yeah. Right, okay, fine. So it's probably not going to reach 200,000 this time round.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea he even played the telly. Reduced. I mean, he's obviously played lots of guitars at some point, but I've never seen a... I think you get the telly and then you get two unreleased live recordings of Stevie Ray Vaughan using the telly.
I mean, they're useless. Put them in the bin.
Yeah.
Can't sell those on afterwards, can you?
No.
Just rip them, put them on Kazaa, make it free for everyone. I thought that story was weird because it's kind of a bit of a non-story, really. I mean, yes, it's a guitar that Stevie Ray Vaughan owned, but it's not a guitar that anyone really cares about. And like you say, it didn't reach its reserve before. It's,
It depends when it was, though, because, you know, this is a 1951.
Oh, I mean, sure, it's a cool guitar, but I mean, you know.
But also, the market has moved a lot from... I don't know when the last time that this was put up for auction was.
Do you know, Matt?
I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Right,
okay.
So, you know, maybe that's enough to kind of shift the price up there, but yeah. I mean, it's a lot of money for it.
The thing is, really, if you're a massive Stevie Ray Vaughan fan, there's only two guitars you want.
Yeah, exactly. And this is not one of them.
And actually, obviously, Fender recently did that set, right?
Yes.
NAMM, there was the Stevie Ray and Jimmy Vaughan set.
Which have obviously gone, like, all to collectors like instantly. So people who are Stevie Ray Vaughan fans are just going to want that.
They've already made their purchase this year. They're not going to drop the 200 grand on the Jimbo, are they?
Yeah, I just think, like, even unless you're like a really big Stevie Ray Vaughan fan, like bigger than anyone, and you also happen to be a millionaire, it's probably not really going to sell, is it?
No.
I don't know, man. I think that I mean, it really depends on how much he wants for it. But I mean, what's just a normal 1951
Nocaster
gonna? Yeah. Yeah, what's that worth now?
30 grand.
Yeah,
probably 20 grand. Yeah,
I mean, it does seem like quite a high. You know, if the reserve before was 200 grand, it does seem like quite a high premium for. I mean, yes, obviously he's a very famous guitar player, but this is not a particularly iconic guitar. So yeah, it does seem weird to have that kind of that premium on it.
Yeah, maybe.
One guitar that I managed to play this week was around at Joe Branton's house when we're shooting these videos. Joe, you're borrowing this Rickenbacker for doing your video shoot last week.
Yes.
And it reminded me that although I absolutely love the look of Rickenbacker basses, I could not play one full time because a lot of my technique is down to muting at the bridge, which is something you absolutely cannot do on a Rickenbacker bass.
As
you
pointed out, it's got a thingy over the top of it.
No, not that. But
not even that.
Because the strings run through the bridge.
Yeah, so
the bridge is above the string, so that you couldn't place your hand on the bridge to mute the end of the strings, because the bridge, the strings
it's
would
run
unimpeded.
It's not technically the bridge, because
it's not. It's where the mutes previously sat. So
yes,
on the bridge of a Rickenbacker, there used to be four adjustable sort of trapezoid mutes that you could move up or down. It's such a shame that they've removed them now, because you could stop them. You could turn them off.
Yeah.
And
you have to like wind them down.
Yeah, you
basically
could wind them down, which would have been fine, and that would have been the modern player. But you could also wind them up and have that cool sort of Beatlesy tone, and that's what I want. But the new ones, even though they have the bridge is the same, they've removed the mutes.
Right.
So because of that, the strings sit beneath sort of the top line of the bridge, as it were. So yeah, it does make it tricky. Of course, you do also have the pickup cover, which, you know, to be honest,
you could take it off.
Yeah, but you get that on all Fenders, so I think that's a sort of a non-starter.
Not on all Fenders.
Well, on like custom shop Fenders.
Yeah, but you take them off.
Well, yeah.
The thing about that is the Fender ones are easy to take off because you just undo two screws. Having taken off a Rickenbacker bridge pickup
cover,
it does
look complicated.
It's very difficult.
Because you've got to take off the whole thing and then reattach the
base. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You have to take the strings off first. You absolutely have to take the strings off. And then you basically take off the entire pickup surround and pull the pickup out pretty much. And then you kind of unhook the bridge plate and then you screw the pickup and the plate back in.
See, I'd never take the cover off because I kind of like it. But then it doesn't affect me because I'd play fingerstyle and right up at the top of the neck.
Yeah, I mean, if you play with a pick, it's basically impossible to use with the bridge pickup on. But yeah, it'd be impossible for me anyway.
It's funny, sort of you saying like, oh, you absolutely couldn't play one. I was sort of playing one and I was like, damn, what? Like, why have I never spent time on one of these before? This is great. I absolutely love the sound of it and found it really super, super playable.
Just, I guess it's the money is the only thing holding you back.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, we spoke about this previously, didn't we? There's the 4003 and the 4003S, and the 4003 is like £2,300 now, which is a big chunk of money. The normal 4003 is block inlays and binding, whereas the S is dot inlays and doesn't have any binding. The S, however, is the more popular of the two. That is the one that Chris Squire used.
Yep.
Yes, that is the one that Paul McCartney used.
Does the S stand for skint?
Yeah, I don't know. But the S, anyway, is about £1,700. There is a Jet Glow black one currently on andybaxterbass.com.
Yep.
And I also saw one in the window of Brighton Guitars. So I was going to pop in, actually, and have a little bit of a chat with them. So I've got a couple of instruments I could move on. And
got some money burning a hole in your pocket.
Yes.
I'd like
Joe,
you to buy it.
I think you should just buy the Epiphone. Buy the Epiphone that you played at
the EB3.
It sounded brilliant, I thought.
Yeah, I played a gig recently this week with Terra Melos, and I played in order to match. We were doing this black suit thing, so in order to match Tim, who plays a black left-handed SG Junior, I played an Epiphone EB3.
How did that work out? Because my experience with those guitars is not particularly great. I think the build is not where it should be.
I agree.
And that was fine when they were super cheap, but I don't think they are super cheap.
They're $299.
Okay, so
They're not mega money. Tuning, not fantastic. But then I do play in a weird tuning anyway, so sort of that didn't help.
What scale length are they?
It's 34 inches.
Oh, is it? Okay,
so
fine.
Long scale. But I was putting it in drop C for the bulk of that, so.
With 40-100s on.
No, I did actually swap those out for 55-110s.
Right.
It was. I thought it looked great. And do you know what I actually really liked about the way it sounded, which is something that I've not liked when playing it on its own. When it's on its own, I'm like, oh man, there's no clarity. It's so boomy and subby and muddy, and there's no definition from that massive big mudbucker pickup in the neck. And the sidewinder pickup on the bridge is really quiet. It doesn't really do anything to balance out the sound. And so that on its own makes the bass a little bit, you know, not work so well. But actually in the context of a band and because of the nature of...
Where you basically can't hear it.
Well, no, just it meant that rather than me sitting alongside the guitar, sort of, because I double up on a lot of riffs, I was actually sitting sort of underneath, offering like just sub and filling out the sound a lot more. And whilst it was somewhere where I've never naturally sat, and certainly not somewhere that modern bass players often choose to sit, I thought it sounded great. It was very sort of very cream, very Zeppelin-y sort of thing.
There is definitely something to be said for a bass that sounds unlike a guitar. You know, we always talk about P basses cutting through the mix, and they do. But they are still a lot of the time occupying the same territory sonically as the guitar.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, something like an EBO or an EB3 filling out that bottom end, there is definitely something to be said for that.
Yeah.
One last thing to do before we dive into news is to say a big thank you to listener and Patreon backer Rob Grant, who sent us a big old box of beers this week. Haven't bought them here. You guys can pick them up on the way home. But yeah, thanks very much, Rob, for sending it through. If anyone else wants to send us things, do get in touch. info@guitarnerds.net. No food. We won't accept food because you might have spiked it with something, but sealed beers. Or sealed root beer, which
seal
is,
beer.
Yeah, seal beer made from seal blubber, melted down seal blubber.
Oh my god,
it's horrendous!
I once saw a band called the Seal Clubbing, the Seal
Club Clubbing,
the Seal Cub Clubbing Club.
All right,
which I thought Seal Cub Clubbing Club, nice. Which it was in like, I think it was 2005 or something, I saw that band, and it's now 13 years on and I still struggle to say the name. And I mean, when I was watching them, they said, "Hi, we're the Seal Cub Clubbing Club and like laughed to themselves. So I like that, despite the fact that they've been in a band for however long, they still thought it was funny every time they said it.
Got any gigs to promote, by the way? Anything coming up?
I'm putting on Daphne and Celeste in a couple of weeks.
It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good.
I'm really excited. Their new song is absolutely fantastic.
I've ditched the punk rock gig that I already have a ticket for on the same day because I want to see Daphne and Celeste.
So they're playing in a really small venue.
Will American listeners know who Daphne and Celeste are?
They were
an American band, but
Were they?
They're American.
But they were mainly famous over here.
Yeah, so Maddie didn't. My girlfriend didn't know who they were, and
she is American.
But yeah, so Daphne and Celeste, most well known for that time that they were 16 and got booed off the main stage.
We were
Reading
all
Festival.
There for that, weren't we?
No, I wasn't.
Packham, you and I were there. We were there in the stage. Throwing cups of urine.
I didn't throw anything. I like Daphne and Celeste.
Oh,
but
so yeah,
I'm not a bigot,
two,
Joe.
Two big songs being "Ooh Stick You" and "UGLY." You ain't got no alibi.
You ugly.
I always really liked them. I thought they were good.
God.
But anyway, so very weirdly, Mark happened to see that they were looking for a few shows, and he put me in touch with the producer. Like, just said, "Oh, you should speak to this guy." I emailed the producer. And who's booking the shows? And we managed to sort something out really last minute.
I'm very excited.
I think it's going to be really good.
On Wikipedia, it says their official website closed down in 2001. Then their management company dissolved. Then Celeste went back to school.
It's tough times. 2001, rough. Because it was 2000 they got booed off stage.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
That was, it lasted a year basically before.
But I read an interview with them where Celeste was basically just saying, like, yeah, we came off stage and Rage Against the Machine and Slipknot came over to us and were like, I can't believe you managed to stay on that long. That's really incredible. And like,
they did manage like 2-3 songs.
I think they stayed on stage for 15 minutes or something.
They did whatever the minimum amount was to get paid, wasn't it?
And yeah, all these, you know, hardened rockers were saying that was really hardcore. Well done, you stayed on. And that's cool.
They were getting to, like, 50 Cent didn't last as long.
No, I was there for that. Last straw was when someone threw a camping chair at him. That was pretty out.
Poor Fiddy. Now he's bankrupt, so.
Well, yeah. There we go.
At one time he did have the biggest selling signature trainer, even more so than Michael Jordan. So,
really?
You know, you win some, you lose some.
How about that?
Indeed.
Two other things before we move on.
Fine. I was ready to go into some news.
Oh, yeah. But two other things. I got a new pedal board over there.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty big.
Yeah, you guys aren't so sure about it.
It's massive.
It's the largest size Friedman tour board. which
wasn't that a character in Game of Thrones, Freedman Torbord.
Yeah. That was good. Which is an excellent pedal board. I thoroughly recommend them. I think they're the best major brand pedal board on the market. I obviously think you should be going to people like Alder and Ash, and
what these or the boutique things that you can't buy through GAG.
I do because there's things like one of the biggest problem with sort of major brand pedal boards is none of them are any more than sort of folded metal, whereas the Freedman actually offers the what would you call the box that you run all your cabling into, Matt?
It's kind of like a patch bay.
Yeah.
Buffered like a patch bay.
Yeah, exactly. That's such an important thing for having sort of like a tidy board and a board that sort of works and is reliable and can be quickly set up.
Their board is not as big as the biggest pedal train.
Right.
It's only 15 by 30, which is actually smaller than the pedal train.
It's like the depth, though, because it's two layers, and like the gig bag is massive.
It's kind of walled, isn't it? And it's got like a skeleton
It's a very good gig bag. Tall, worthy gig bag, unlike the pedal train ones that fall apart.
That gig bag is bigger than the suitcase that I took to America for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was pretty big. When I had to get on the rush hour train to get here, I was not sort of all the other commuters' favourite person.
Why such a change, Joe, from the small board?
I
just want to put loads of pedals on.
Yeah, I'm just going to try and make a massive pedal board. I think that's the general idea. One thing I didn't realize until I opened it up, because it has a separate angled area for expression pedals, which I think is excellent. Unfortunately, it has two of those, and I was like, I have to buy a second expression pedal.
No, I don't think you can.
No, you can't.
We just looked at it earlier.
Well, maybe you can. Maybe you can unbolt them.
Them because you can buy them separately, and then you can bolt extra ones on.
Right, I see. Right. The gig bag is so big that if you follow us on Instagram, you will have seen this. The gig bag is so big that I can almost fit. Well, I can basically fit my entire body in there.
You did climb into it.
I can't quite close the lid. Which is good.
You want to be getting on that yoga, mate.
We could definitely kick you into there.
Well, I mean, it's quite good that I can't close the lid, because Jay said, if you fit in that and the lid closes, I'm going to throw you down the stairs.
I wanted to see how roadworthy the gig bag was.
But I'm still here. I'm still alive. I couldn't fit in. Joe, what was the other thing that you wanted to say?
Oh, my band got played on Radio 1.
Yeah?
How funny is that?
Haven't we all?
Instrumental prog band got played on Radio 1.
You're not a prog band. Genesis or something. You're like Dillinger Escape Plan.
That is prog.
Nah, it's metal, mate.
It's prog.
Are they Metal Hammer?
Is Metal Hammer still a thing?
Yeah, Terrorizer went under. No,
Metal Hammer did go under, and then it got saved at the last minute.
Yeah.
I think
NME went under though, didn't it?
Did it? No, I thought it was free.
NME. It went under this week. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Toys R Us and NME.
And Maplin. Yeah. Where are you going to buy your capacitors from?
Know. If you had to put those three in order of which one you're most sad about, Maplin, Toys R Us, or NME, J. Cross?
Probably most sad about NME. And then.
Yeah, me too.
I've read it, I think, three times since it became free. The thing is that it just became loads and loads of adverts, which is what you need to be when you're a free magazine. But I don't think I ever bought a single copy of the NME, so I'm not really that bothered. But I also I don't really care about
the Smiths.
No. I was going to say I went to a Toys R Us once, and it was like hell on earth.
Terrible.
And I don't think I've ever bought anything from Maplin. So
Joe Branton.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I don't care about any of them.
Toys R Us. I remember playing N64 in Toys R Us in 1996.
Mark has just set this up to show how uninterested an NME is.
All under one roof. It's called Toys R Us.
Joe, how much is the big pedal board due to the fact that you saw Terramelos about 4 days ago?
I did. I played a gig with Terramelos.
Yeah.
He was lovely and fantastic, and we hang out. And we drank beers, and he gave me some plectrums and a record and a pin badge.
And then you went home smitten bought a big pedal board.
I
because the I one thing that he
that
was
man.
Upset about you at you for was not having enough pedals.
His pedal boards are quite small, actually.
His pedal board was amazing, because I went to the gig the next day and I spoke about it, because I was like, someone who I admire for their pedal use, and then was like, why is your pedal board just a plank of wood? I was like, it's one of those things where you're like, you use so many good pedals, but yeah, you put everything on. And he had a really good answer. He's like, basically, I need to go on tour, can't afford to put it in the hold, so I bought the biggest mono case you can buy for pedal trains, which is like, I don't know, probably about the same size as the one that Joe Branton's got. Got a plank of wood that perfectly fits in the base, and then built all of his pedal board so it goes in that bag. And then all the other pedals that he uses on the side perfectly stack on top, and then the whole thing fits in a mono gig bag. Really impressive.
There we go. Utilitarian.
Nothing fancy for the king of pedals, basically. Absolutely. What we should do is dive in to a whole bunch of pedal-based, because it is all pedals this week. Shout out to Mick Dodd.
New wave.
We've been talking a lot about pedal stations this week, but a company called Trinilog have announced the brand new effects station. Matty, tell us about it.
Well, according to a great quote on their website, music first, gears come last. All right.
What?
I don't believe you, but you know, whatever. That's what it says on their front page. Details are limited, but from what I can gather, it is a cartridge-based effects system that's effectively controlled via an app. So it's a tiny little pedal board with four buttons and a little screen on it.
Yes.
And when you want to add effects, you basically plug in a little cartridge, and that cartridge gives you delay.
Like a SNES.
Like a SNES. Yeah, we're going back in time. So yeah, basically you get different effects that plug in via cartridge, no need for cables. It all goes together in a little box, and then you hook up the iPad or Android app and create your pedal chain and put them in any orders you want and save them, and then recall them later on your on the foot switches.
Oh my goodness. It looks amazing.
Hasn't it got a little leather handle on the top of it?
Yeah. A little handle
on top. So what I don't understand, so the little cartridges, they are for each effect. So it's like it's a bit like a Helix or a Headrush, but rather than having everything built in,
you have to plug them in.
Each individual one into separately sold boxes.
Yeah, so basically one box holds eight little cartridges.
I'm into this.
I mean, it really does seem like a
it looks great.
A Game Boy or something.
Are they're analog effects though, right?
I don't.
They can't be analog effects.
Are. I think they're digital by the looks.
But
of
then
it.
Why do you have to like slot them in?
So yeah,
I don't know.
No, they've got to be digital. How can they?
Well, because you could have a like digital brain, so it could be like the Chase Bliss pedals, where it's like digital control, but analog effects.
Yeah.
Yes. And actually, this isn't the first time it's been done. Yamaha actually made a pedal board in the 80s that was like a big. It kind of looked like I don't know. Imagine like an ES5, for example, but with an extra bit on the end, but you plugged the pedal slots into the top, and then they were your thing. So you can buy just the module. And it's actually really hard to find the modules with the boards. I can't remember what it was called, but yeah, it's a really old 80s Yamaha system that were analog effects that basically plugged into a foot controller.
This is
a similar thing, but you can obviously reprogram it.
This is also very similar to the project that Devi Ever kickstarted as well, and then didn't actually complete, as far as I remember. She was working on like a modular effects system that sounds very much like this, where you just kind of slotted in new effects.
Yeah, and actually, Zvec tried a similar thing with their Invento box, which was the pedal board system that you could basically, they gave you a load of schematics for the boards they already make. It was really plug and play. And then they were going to release loads of other ones, and then it kind of never really took off. Ah, it's the Yamaha SB100, I believe. I was just looking that up. If people have, the SB100 pedal board was the professional pedal board system made by Yamaha in the 1980s that featured five slots that you could then plug pedals into.
Why has this idea not taken off? This is the coolest, best thing I've ever seen. This is all I want ever. I just want an SB100. I just want to buy this. I want to buy this Trinilog thing now, and I can't. I've got to wait. So it says it's not 97 days until it launches on Indiegogo. We now need to do like a podcast countdown.
What are you talking about? If you wanted this,
yes,
then you would be using a multi-effects board rather than individual effects.
You can't plug stuff in. That's what Joe's into.
Yes, I can choose. If I want to change my effect, all I have to do is unscrew the back panel on my Trinilog effects and select from one of my other cartridges, which I can then slot in and then reattach the back panel.
It's like being a tape record label in 2018. It's like you could just listen on Spotify.
I have to say,
we've made tapes.
I may have to go on a hunt for this SB100 because it looks fantastic. The expression pedal on this is this incredibly skinny sort of expression pedal. It looks fantastic. Oh, my favorite thing about it is that the on-off switch for the entire unit is just above the toe point of the expression pedal.
Brilliant. So I've slipped. I'm just bringing the volume up. It's turned off.
Being from the 80s, this definitely takes like a couple of minutes to boot up. So if you accidentally turn it off mid-gig.
Probably also uses those D-cell batteries, like the proper fat ones.
There's not just a 100, there's also a 200, which takes even more.
Yeah, but the 200 has got a patch bay on it, which is all the ins and outs. So you could actually route all of them in different orders.
Yes.
I wish you could see Joe's face right now. He's loving it.
Oh my god, this is the best product of all time in history.
So what we should do is...
You can buy the pedal separately as well.
I think we should track the progress of the Trinlog effect station. So what is it, 97 days until
97 days
until Indiegogo starts?
Also, I want to try and find an SB1 or SB200. Okay. I will buy one. If anyone finds one, let me know. I will buy one.
Do it. Maleco have announced a couple of brand new pedals this week. Jay Cross, I believe you got the rundown on the Downer and the Thicken.
Yeah, so as with everything that Maleco does, I don't think I will ever understand what they're trying to do. And I also think that once you play one of these pedals, it won't sound like anything that you have either A, expected it to sound like, or B, ever heard before.
Oh my god, an SB100 went for £28. Oh, wait, that was 2014. Don't worry.
Oh, there we go.
So I'm sure it will have gone up about £2 since then, so... You'll still get one.
You're still quitting. Don't worry. So Maleco have released two new pedals. The first one is the Downer, which uses wave folding and saturation to do something with octaves. I've been sat here reading the description for the last, I don't know, half hour, and I can't get my head around it.
Okay.
I don't really understand. I never understand.
Why don't
what
we talk
Maleco-
to? Let's talk to a grown up who knows what they're talking about. Matt Knight, what do these do?
Well, basically, it is an octave down pedal, right? On the base of it, it's an octave down pedal, but it has high pass and low pass filter, so you can tweak the tone a little bit if you want it more bassy or more trebly. You can blend in between 100% dry or 100% wet. But then it's got two different types of drive: saturation, which is like normal gain, or wave folding, which I don't really know how to explain, but I think it's when the waveform basically like collapses in on itself, which causes like a form of gain, basically. So it's a distorted octave down pedal is probably the way to look at it, but it's a little bit more synthy if you use the wave folding rather than the saturation.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of like, as with everything that Maleco does, a little bit weird, a bit quirky. And I guess you would look at it as more like a screwed up kind of pog or something like that. But it doesn't have the octave up, just the kind of octave down.
That's all their pedals. It's a screwed up something else.
Yeah, it's like a broken version of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I plugged the Sneak Attack in again the other day. No, not the Sneak Attack. The Charlie
Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Charlie Foxtrot. I was like, I can't quite work this out, but I really like it.
The Charlie Foxtrot is just one of the weirdest pedals I've ever played.
I honestly think that's probably the weirdest pedal, because when you're playing a pedal that's like, you know, like classic Matt Knight fodder, which is like, yeah, it's a ring modulator with like four octaves down and stuff, it's like, yeah, this is weird. And like that What was that pedal that the Guitar Disruptor?
Yeah, I thought you were going to mention that, by Electro Faustus,
which is like really weird, but they're just synthy. Yeah. You know, they're just okay, it makes your guitar sound like a kind of broken synth, and it's just noisy. With the Charlie Foxtrot, it still sounds like a guitar, and it still sounds usable, but
it's not actually.
It's not usable.
Yeah, and the fact that even Joe is admitting that it's not usable,
I think it's tricky. But it's not. This is not. I think that sort of effect can be done usably. I think they got it wrong. I think effects like that, like Matt, obviously you saw Terra Melos as well. Nick Reinhardt uses those sorts of glitches all the time. But there are pedals that do that in a more reliable way.
I think having the random aspect to the Charlie Foxtrot is just what makes it borderline... I mean, not even borderline unusable, completely unusable.
Well, I know. I think that the way that you would use it, though, is because Maleko come from a modular synth background. So it's got a trigger in. So the idea is that you would run a sequencer through it, for example, or your guitar, and then the external trigger in would come from the kick drum. So...
Yeah.
The way it slices and randomizes is actually in time with the music you're playing.
Right, so you okay, sort of that
know
makes
where
sense.
It's, where it's coming from.
So as long as you've got like a metronome or you've got something going in there to keep it. So when we were demoing it, when we were doing the video and when we were messing around with it, it didn't have anything to keep the beat.
No, so
didn't have anything
far
to keep the trick.
Random.
Understood. Okay, right. Well, that makes a lot more sense.
But just going back to, you know, talking about Nick, and when we saw Terra Melos on Fridays, he actually uses this new Red Panda pedal that came out at NAMM, but it's a granular delay, so it's still giving you repeats, but what it's doing is it's splicing up the audio it's captured to kind of so you still get a normal signal, but you also get this kind of random signal in the background as well, so it sounds way more usable.
He used that a lot, and he used it to really great effect. It was
I think the Charlie Foxtrot is more like a kind of weird tremolo, in the sense that it's just like you don't really know what it's going to go up and down in volume, you just don't know when or how.
What I find funny with all these glitch pedals is you could basically do all of this 15 years ago on the Boss Slicer, and everyone just went, that pedal's rubbish, mate. Nah, not really into that, don't know what it does. And now there's these pedals that are like twice the price, don't do half as much stuff, almost unusable. And everyone's like, yeah, that's the one for me. Yeah, definitely getting that one. And then, you know, the Slicer's just still going, but it's just...
Actually, it's being discontinued.
Are you allowed to tell us that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well,
Slice is a cornerstone of Tim's pedalboard setup.
Because the other thing that we were talking about the other day in the office is the Boss FRV1, which is no longer available.
Oh, I want one of those.
That's a great pedal.
They are now going for £200 plus.
Ridiculous.
On eBay. They are
the grey version of the Fender Reverb.
No, just the Reverb.
It was the brown one.
Yeah, the Fender one.
The brown one.
Yeah, there was the three. There was the FBM, which is the Bassman preamp, essentially. Then there was the FRV one, which was the reverb, and then the FDR, which was like a deluxe reverb.
And that was the one in the tweed chassis.
No, that was the one in the black.
Oh.
So there was
FRV was in
two
the,
of them,
oh, the
tweed. So two of them were like preamps, kind of with other features built in, the Bassman and the Deluxe, and the FRV was just the reverb tank.
Oh, I understand.
Like, you know, like a separate Fender reverb tank. Yeah, I've seen the price on those crawling up, and that's upsetting because that is a great sounding pedal.
Yeah.
And everyone should have one.
They were going for no money as well.
But I do wonder, like, for that sort of money, you could easily get a Strymon Flint.
Well,
I think that's
a
better sounding reverb than the Boss, but, you know, it doesn't look as cool. The Boss is a real good-looking pedal. So how about this other pedal then, the Thicken?
Yeah, the Thicken actually seems a lot more, you know, in terms of Maleko.
Understandable.
Yeah, in terms from Maleko's point of view, it's a lot more, I would say, usable for Luddites like myself. So it's kind of a delay pedal. It's also got a chorus aspect to it, but primarily the point of it is to thicken up your sound, hence the name Thicken. So there's a lot going on here. It's been designed in part by what's his name, Colin Thingy from Wire, from the band Wire. Colin Geezer, I can't remember his name. It's here somewhere.
Sure, Colin Geezer.
Colin Newman from the band Wire.
Gary Newman.
Gary Newman. No, not Gary.
From the band Gary Newman.
And so yeah, it's basically he wanted something that would thicken up his sound, and so they've done that through rather than.
Was his tone a bit wiry?
Needed. Yeah. Oh my goodness me. Rather than just driving the sound in order to beef it up, they've done it by widening the signal almost through modulation. So they reckon that there's three aspects to it. Mad. I've not had a chance to watch the video yet. I'm sure it's great though.
It's basically chorus is effectively a really short delay. So sure. It's got two choruses in it, which are two separate delay lines and a delay, which gives you another delay line. And then you're basically spreading the amount of signal across all three delays. So it's kind of like running three short delays all at the same time.
That's going to be pretty thick.
To thicken your sound.
And then you can add a preamp to, you know, really go heavy on the thickness.
It does what it says on the tin.
It looks nice too.
Manite, tell us about the Even MIDI Pitchy MIDI controller. I saw a picture of this and I thought it was just the Digitech whammy.
It looks exactly like the Digitech Ricochet, which I'll get to in a second. Basically, we've spoken about Even MIDI before. They came out with the pedal that was your H9 controller, so it could control up to three H9s at once and then put all of the controls on physical control knobs that you could turn in real time, and it made it much easier to kind of expand your H9 beyond not having a MIDI controller, basically. This is a genius product. So basically, you have an H9 and you set a particular algorithm that's already in the H9 to preset number one. You plug in the Even MIDI, and then this sends all of the MIDI controls to your H9 to basically turn it into a whammy.
I see.
So there's a particular algorithm called, I think it's just called pitch, and it's just like one that goes up, and you basically plug that in to preset one. It automatically engages preset one, and then the Even MIDI pitchy does all of the rest of the work, but it gives you all of the whammy settings.
Right, I see.
All of them, and adds a sequencer, and gives you all the ricochet modes as well. So it works exactly like a whammy and a whammy Digitech Ricochet.
I mean, how many people out there do you reckon have got H9s on their board and a whammy, like taking up tons of room?
Well, yeah. I mean, because it does the sounds, but unless you have an expression pedal plugged in and then you have a separate MIDI controller to then go to that sound, I was like, actually, this is kind of a genius product.
Yeah.
Really? Because you hit that, it automatically tells your H9 what preset it needs to go to and what setting you want, and then it's got all of the controls on there. Sequencer, you know, the ricochet mode, the standard whammy mode, which you can do like a pitchfork.
Yeah.
So it's a soft touch switch, so if you hold it down, it will do the whammy up or the whammy down. Absolutely. I was like, that's brilliant. I think it's like $140.
€119.
Yeah.
So looking at it, it appears, and I can't tell for sure, but I think this might be a licensed product.
It's too close.
It just looks exactly like the control section of a Digitech Whammy, so I would be really surprised if it isn't. But just looking on the website, it does appear. It says, you know, this is designed to be used with an Eventide registered trademark, H9 registered trademark, and Digitech registered trademark Whammy. So like, They're putting the trademarks in all over the shop. So
yeah, weird.
Presumably, it's or all.
Maybe they're doing that to cover their backs.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It seems.
Because that's what Line 6 used to do, or still do, when they have the kind of like pilot's guides. They'll put this particular sound is based on this particular Boss DD2 trademark.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Weird.
But they never actually went to Boss and said, we want to put a DD2 sound in it.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably just to kind of cover themselves.
Interesting. I'm keeping a keen eye on this brand. They make stuff that I have absolutely no use for, but for people like nerds like you, Matt, Even MIDI seem to be doing some really interesting stuff.
Yeah. I thought it looks very cool, and actually I just went on the website because they've released full details now from when I checked before, and they've actually told you how to hook up with a Boss ES8.
There we go.
Oh, very cool. So,
awesome.
There we go.
Nice.
I was like, oh, maybe it makes it even more worth my while. Even more.
Joe Brenton. Yeah.
See,
we have
before I talk about that.
Okay.
I found myself over on...
Pardon?
I found myself over on the official Tony Levin Reverb Shop.
Why?
Where, because King Crimson's Tony Levin has for sale his Yamaha SB100 as used by Tony Levin on the King Crimson live record, one of their live records.
Brilliant, it's a classic. How much?
Down from £14,749.61 to a measly £1,290.59 plus free shipping to the UK.
Wait, it was £14,000?
I mean, yeah. I think
it's £1,000.
Yeah, but I don't think it ever was that. I think maybe he got confused when he was doing the listing. You
know, maybe because he had the funk fingers on his hands and he couldn't use the keyboard. he was trying to type with the drumsticks on and he couldn't do it.
Too many digits.
Did I tell you that, and maybe you know this because you've been, but when I went to the Guitar Center on Sunset Boulevard, you know they've got all the handprints outside.
Yeah.
Tony Levin's has got it.
Has
with
he got the two fingers? Unbelievable!
It's so funny. It's so good.
Unbelievable.
So I could buy Tony Levin's actual SB100 for a measly £1,300.
You could do that, or you could buy the brand new TC Electronic SpectraDrive bass pedal.
I absolutely could. And what a fantastic product. As if I could love TC even more at the moment, ever since they released my own signature sound. yeah.
Where's the conflict of interest siren? I've just left it under the table.
So this Spectra Drive is absolutely fantastic. TC, who whilst having a very, very successful bass amplifier range, been very quiet on the old bass effects recently.
Yep.
And in fact, on everything bass related recently, but this Spectra Drive is an absolutely
you've done like really bad business for them.
Yeah,
you were the last.
I've really
tried.
I probably was the last bass player to do a signature sound.
Yeah, we released that, and then suddenly all the bass sales have just dropped off. It's weird.
So the Spectra Drive. So this is absolutely fantastic. What a wonderful product for TC to release. They are finally throwing the hat into the ring of the one bass effect that all bass players want, a good preamp. That competition for the ever dominant Sans amp. You know, recently we've had things like
BB1X.
We've had the BB1X from Boss. We've had Dark Glass becoming very popular. Everyone's tried it. MXR did a very successful
M108, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Or wasn't it?
No,
82?
M80.
82.
801
Blink 182.
I don't know, but you know, MXR did one. There was the Electro Harmonix had the I can't remember. There's had a name.
Baseballs.
But no, it's like
not baseballs.
Essentials, or it was called something like that. Yeah, fundamentals, or
It was like a bass workstation.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so everyone's tried the preamp, and I think people struggle to make something that's going to knock those Sans amps and Sans amp VTs off people's boards. Certainly, I think Dark Glass have come closest in recent years, but the problem is it's just so scooped that only metalers are going to buy Dark Glass stuff.
Yeah.
This looks fantastic. So this is their version of it. What makes this great is it's a double foot switchable version. So it is a preamp with a switchable drive. It has an XLR out.
Yeah.
And then what makes it fantastic is they've added, and the reason for the name, they've added their very good multiband Spectra compressor is built in. So this, essentially, I was looking at this and being like, oh, because I know I've got that big Friedman, but I also have a little Friedman board.
So you bought the world's biggest pedal board, and now you found a pedal that does everything that you need it to do in
and
one
I kind
pedal.
And I kind of bought that because the Friedman pedal board I have at home, I can't quite fit. I'm like two pedals too few can go on the board. But if I got this, I could lose my Sans amp, I could lose my drive, and I could lose my compressor.
I mean,
it would be all three things in
one. Yeah, but you wouldn't.
Well, I probably would. I probably would. I'd get this and lose all three of those pedals.
Oh,
save some space. It looks absolutely fantastic. I'm really into it.
The thing that pushes this further up the list than, I do apologise, Matty, the BB1X, is the XLR out. The BB1X doesn't have an XLR out.
There's a balanced out on the BB1X.
Yeah, there is, but it's not XLR, is it?
Yeah, you just need a connector.
TRS to XLR.
Yeah, I suppose.
Just need a different cable.
Exactly the same.
It is exactly the same, but despite it being exactly the same, a lot of people want to plug an XLR in.
People are lazy.
Yes, they are. They are, but you know.
I mean, I don't really know why it makes any odds to me because I never use it.
Mm. No, it's the sound man.
Or lady.
Yeah, or lady. I mean, the sound person.
It's
sound
actually no man. Good to me either because...
Dave Soundman.
Yeah, that's what I was referencing a very specific man that I know who does sound, Dave Soundman.
I mean, it's actually no good to any bass players that use more effects than just that because, of course, you're going to want them to take the DI from your amp if you're using a
yes.
effect. So it's kind of a moot point. But nonetheless,
but
I think this
front.
Is... what?
Yeah, don't but all your effects in front of that...
But I think this is how I run my rig.
I like to have the old compressor right at the end.
I mean, the other thing is it does have a it's got an auxiliary in, and it's got a headphone out, which is nice.
Has it?
It does have a headphone out. Yeah.
Has it got any auxiliary?
It's
in
got
as
an
well?
Auxiliary in and a headphone out.
So you can plug your phone in to jam along, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just
get a
large jack to mini jack. And you use it as an effects loop. Lovely. I'm kidding.
It's got a ground lift on it as well.
It does. No, it wouldn't work. It does have a ground lift on it.
Seriously, though, for home, thinking about it, you know, if you just wanted some like a single small box that you could plug into the mains, plug a phone in to listen stuff, headphones out, and get a decent bass sound as well, that's like another totally valid reason for buying this pedal, as well as it, you know, being great for live and recording and stuff like that. Just a little practice box. How much is this?
I don't know yet. It's only just been announced. I don't know if it's hit sort of some shops yet.
Okay, interesting. I'm going to look out for that because I was thinking I don't play enough bass at home, and something with some headphones that sounded half decent.
£209.
Okay. Whoa! So wow, at £209, they are undercutting Sans Amp. They're undercutting Dark Glass, and they are £10 more expensive than the. Than the Boss
BB1X. Interesting. We will see how that sits in the market. How about we take? We're almost at the end of the episode, but we take maybe one or two
questions.
Tom says, "Good afternoon, guitar folks. Long time lurker, first time poster here. I've been recording my own material using an old Tascam 4-track, and I want to transfer it to a laptop. But these new ones have no line in anymore. I've been told there's some sort of line in to USB connector I can use to transfer my music onto a laptop.
Wait."
Can anyone shed any light on this?
Do you know what this has made me remember?
What?
That I've been thinking about buying.
A tape 4-track?
No. The Tascam Gibson 335.
What?
Excuse me?
The Tascam Gibson 335.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, no. I don't want to tell people on the podcast because there's only one at GAC and I want to buy it.
A Tascam Gibson 335.
It's only £3,000.
What is this?
So, you know, Gibson bought Tascam.
Yeah.
Well, when they
bought... the orange thing?
Yeah, when they bought Tascam, they released a Tascam Gibson pack. It was a Tascam orange Gibson 335 that came with a Tascam interface and microphone.
That's very
weird. And it's
$2,999.
I'll tell you what. And it's orange, but it's a great colour.
Absolutely red.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't care about the Tascam stuff, but that colour, that's Tascam orange. It's the only time that colour's been used. It's a great finish. Check it out. Look for the...
That is actually a great looking guitar.
It's a great looking guitar. I'm really thinking about buying it.
When you say it's the only time that colour's ever been used, what you mean there is Gibson have made an orange guitar and called it Tascam orange.
Yeah.
It's an orange 335.
Find me another orange 335.
That is a really good looking guitar,
isn't it? And of course it's not sold because it's a Tascam pack.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, no one wants some crap
for
old Tascam.
£3,000.
No,
I think it comes with Cakewalk, which I don't think is even a valid software.
No, Gibson, I think it's folded. No, it didn't Band Lab by Kate Walk. Yeah, it's owned by someone else now. Yeah. So.
Okay, so it's like completely defunct. Anyway, I just found this box, like at this dusty box in the corner of the warehouse the other day when I was looking for something interesting to demo. Sort of took it out and I was like, why is this mic set in here? I opened it up and it was a bright orange 335.
It's really good.
I really want it.
It's very nice.
I'm strongly considering purchasing this.
It's nice. It's nice. So, Joe, you're probably the closest. You're the one who gets approached by kind of... pro audio dealers more than any of us, I would say. What is the kind of new hip thing for getting audio into the PC? I know Focusrite was very much in vogue a few years ago. What's the brand now?
What's the question? As soon as I heard the word Tascam, I was like,
nobody said anything. Oh yeah, we did.
What
yeah,
is a good USB interface?
Oh right. Oh yeah, Focusrite is still absolutely dominating on the budget end of the market. I mean, the fact that you can pick up like a Scarlett 2i2 for, you know, whatever it is, like way sub £100.
Yeah.
Like, that's fantastic. And they're really good. The good thing about Focusrite is they come with really good like software packages as well. So you get the Red 2 and Red 3 plugins with their Scarlett series that are really good. And also, depending on if you're not in a great rush and you sort of keep your eye out, Focusrite run different like free software packages every few months. So you can get like a different free thing. Like when I got mine, I think I got like a Novation base station virtual instrument as well, like you know, on top of the Red 2 and 3 plugins, and they're always doing stuff like that. So I kind of rate them because of that, because they're such a large company that they always do deals with other software brands.
Yeah,
and they're affordable and they look good, they're well built, they sound good, they're easy to use. Obviously, Matt's going to want us to talk about the Roland bits and bobs, which are actually like if I was picking between two brands, I would either be going for like a Roland interface or I'd be going for a
not my product category, mate.
Oh right, okay.
He don't care. He don't care. It's Roland. It's like computer actually, stuff. He don't care.
Bizarrely
but
enough,
they are really good.
Roland actually make a USB to jack cable.
Yes,
that I've tried and it actually works surprisingly. Well,
there's a few options.
It's specially designed for the use of actually recording guitar, and I think it's got a little. There's something in the jack plug that basically allows the signal to be hot enough to go via USB, so you can record it in.
So basically, there's two options here. Tom, who asked the question, you could, if you're comfortable still recording on the four track, obviously you can just take a line out of that to USB. There's a few companies that do it, but probably Roland are a good option for that because the quality of conversion will be good. But I mean, I would say, you know, go for something like a cheap interface like the Focusrite. There's some Roland options as well, because that means that you could record direct into the computer if you want to, and it also allows you to take audio out of the computer, and there's a few other things. You could connect up speakers, which is something, you know, that you would struggle to do for particularly successfully with the four track. Sorry, Matt?
Do it in stereo as well. So if you took a TRS to dual mono out of the line out, and some of those old Tascam ones had multiple outs as well.
Yeah.
So if it's got two outs or even four outs, one for every track, you could buy a big enough and cheap enough interface that allowed you to record each individual track.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You get, you know, if you got a two in or a four in, yeah, you could actually just bounce tracks either two or one at a time. So yeah, that's the way I would go. With that, we actually need to wrap this podcast up. Thank you for joining us this week. We are going to do another half an hour of this guff over at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you access to the regular episode ad free and early, and at $5 a month you get an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus interviews and mini series like Joe Branton's Rant On. At $10 a month, you get your name read out on the regular episode every week by Joe Branton in one breath, just like these people have.
Yeah, don't worry. What did we do earlier? You and me burst into song.
Topical.
Rob Gould, Nate Nagel, Tucker Middon, and Eagleburg, every day spring, Augustine Rosses,
Cinnamon
Bomb, and Robert Stavely, Derek Ritzel, Martin Tim, and Davis, Aaron Shaman, Blake, Wilde, and Jake Drake, Christopher Lawson, Ron, Jerry Scott, Dylan, Dean, Robert Stavely, Rob Black, Rob John, Derek,
ring, which Chris Connors and Joyce Connors versus Michael Matos, Marcus Patrice, JD, Sean, Andy McKenzie, Laurie, and Sitch, and Godfrey Paul, going in with Chris Connors, Brian, from Sid, Mugabe, Colin Anderson.
I didn't get any of those names.
I always worry that someone's going to walk into the room when I'm watching professional wrestling, and because it's quite an embarrassing thing to watch as a 33-year-old man, and I feel the same way that someone... I feel, you know, if someone walked in while you were listening to that, you'd probably feel the same way. You have the awkward conversation about, like, what are you listening to?
It's not safe for work, but not because it's rude. Just
rubbish. I won't put the explicit tag on the podcast just so less people download it don't have to listen to that absolute nonsense. We are very, very close to getting 200 backers in total on Patreon.
Despite Joe's
despite
best
this. Absolute nonsense. And we had a few new ones this week. So we're about... I can't remember how many people we are away. We're not that far away from 200.
The Patreon page says 191.
Okay, so we need 9 new ones. And I said that we would do something special and people could choose what that would be. I did say one of the options was to make you listen to 24 hours worth of Muse back to back.
When on earth do I have... I don't have 24 hours ever.
All this big Patreon money you'll be making, you can afford to take a day off and listen to Muse. Or Joe could be, I don't know...
What?
I don't know, forced to stare at a bottle of Jack Daniels and not drink any of it. Some sort of booze.
I'm still not drinking.
Related thing.
You just said that you had some beers this week.
Yeah, but when I say not drinking, I mean like not drinking a litre of scotch.
Right, okay, fantastic.
Or Matt Knight could be forced to play, I don't know, he could be forced to make a statement saying how much he loves Behringer pedals.
I think it should be.
What about the personal phone call? That was quite... quite topical. I'll call people.
So if we're going to say if 200 people sign up to the Patreon, you're going to make 200 personal phone calls.
I will make 200 personal phone calls.
Okay, I'm into it.
I'll tell you what I might actually do. I will make 200 personal phone calls and I will record them.
And we'll put that out as,
well, it will be a few
people
episodes.
People might not want that.
They don't get a choice. If you sign up, that's what you're signing up for. Okay. I will call you.
I will
call you whilst you're sleeping.
We'll see if we can make that dream a reality. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you want to tell us what you'd like to see
I'm
from
gonna
the...
I'm going to call you and speak to your spouse.
I
quite like the idea of Joe reading out the names of the 200 people that are our Patreon backers. Either in one breath or in the sea.
Yeah, like, okay.
Joe gets in the sea in April.
Yeah.
Ice bath.
And lovely. Ice bucket challenge. The Patreon.
I'll carry on doing the one breath. I'll read out everyone's names, but I'll add your wives or husbands and children.
I think.
Bit weird.
No, here's what I think. I think it should be that you phone people up, and the personal phone call has to be one breath.
I think. I think we stand Joe on the seafront. We get 200 buckets of ice cold water, and then he reads a name, and then we throw one of the buckets over him, and then he has to read another one.
I will die.
And we see how far he can get
before I die,
and we film it, and it's going to be hilarious.
I'll do that.
If you want to tell us what you'd
Speaking of ice buckets,
cut me off.
Did you see that there was, you know, the ice bucket challenge? Everyone's like making fun of it. You see, they like found a cure for ALS. Well, I don't think they found a cure for ALS, but it really helped.
Yeah.
Mad.
We can change the world. And in the case
make
of this,
it a better
we can
place.
Make us richer by putting Joe water on Joe Branton. That changed the world for me. Facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can tell us what you'd like us to do for our 200 Patreon backer milestone. You can also follow what we're doing on Twitter and Instagram @guitar nerds. And new videos going up all the time now over at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Thanks very much for listening this week, and we will speak to you next week.
Bye.
Cheers, gang.
Farewell.